It's time for Herd Mentality, the weekly episode where you take control of the discussion today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Friday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. Well, folks, we got a lot to get into today when it comes to some outstanding herd mentality questions. And we also do need to acknowledge right off the bat that the injury situation for the Buffalo Bills entering this Miami Dolphins game is not looking so good. And tomorrow on the podcast, and yes, tomorrow, we're going to have a Saturday episode because things got a little bit out of schedule this week with the Bills playing on Monday Night Football, and I wanted to get herd mentality in, so we're doing that today. And tomorrow will be our typical Friday podcast where I'll give you my leftover thoughts, my predictions, my NFL draft prospects to watch. But also, we got to talk to Dr. Kyle Trimble about these injuries. And there's a lot to get into. On Thursday, Micah Hyde, Dane Jackson, Jordan Phillips, Jordan Poyer did not practice. And so a lot of concern, especially when you're talking about the biggest threat that the Dolphins offer are those receivers, Waddle and Hill, and you're potentially without any of your starters in the secondary. And when I say any, that extends to Trey White. So Hyde, Poyer, Trey White, Dane Jackson. I mean, there's a lot to get into there. So we'll save that for Saturday, and we'll leave it to the expert, Dr. Kyle Trimble, to let us know what's going on there. And then from there, I'll build some things to talk about off of that, because this availability on Sunday is very, very concerning. All right, let's get into your herd mentality questions. The first one comes from Chris. Chris says, it's officially Dolphins week, and I've been waiting a few weeks to ask you this. I've heard numerous people talk about taking away Tua's first read is the best way to beat him. Can you explain what that means? How do teams do that, and how can the Bills do it? Great question. So we're going to talk about what it means to take away his first read and how to do it, how the Bills can do that. So first of all, you want to focus pre-snap. Tua, when he gets up to the line of scrimmage or wherever he's going to take the snap, he is surveying the defense and he's looking at matchups and he's assessing where he's going to have access to fit the football based on the leverage of the defense and what pre-snap reads he can figure out. What clues can he get from assessing the alignment of the Bills defense as to where post-snap the space is going to be available to throw the football? So first things first, you have to change the menu on him. Give him one look pre-snap, spin late, change your coverage post-snap. So show one thing and do another at the snap. Spin your safeties late. Drop guys into zones where he's not expecting those players to be. So you got to change the picture, change the menu for him based on what you're telling him pre-snap to what's going to happen post-snap. That'll force him to hold the football for one extra second. Give your rush a little bit more time. Have him thinking and go from there. Next of all is to muddy up the front, right? I talked about this. Threaten the offensive line, threaten the pocket with five, six, even seven rushers on some snaps, and keep that offensive line wondering which four are coming. So threaten with five, six, seven, but only four rush and the rest go back into coverage. That's going to create some level of pause for Tua. And I'd even go as far as to say, be willing to drop Von Miller. Be willing to drop Greg Rousseau, Boogie Basham, into coverage for some short zone responsibilities, all part of changing the picture for him. Well, he sees Greg Rousseau is lined up over the left tackle, probably thinks he's going to rush the passer. No, have him drop out at the snap and send the slot corner. Be creative with your rush package. Rush four, don't rush more than four, but be creative with it to get the offensive line thinking, to get Tua thinking, and ultimately forcing him to hold the football and maybe have to go somewhere different than he intended to go with the football. So hopefully that answers the question of what it means, how teams can do it, and what specifically the Bills can do on Sunday. And with these injuries in the secondary, this will be more important than ever. Next one comes from Paul. Paul says, the Baltimore secondary was supposed to be one of the best in the league, but got torched in the last quarter by the Dolphins. Do we match up better than Baltimore, or will it be as equally as hard for us? Well, I think if Baltimore was healthy, they would have one of the better secondaries in the NFL, but they're not. And so when you look at their defensive backfield, Marcus Peters, one of their starting corners, that was his first game of the season. You could tell he was gassed. Marlon Humphrey, their best player on defense, he got injured during the game, wasn't available late. Brandon Stevens, their third corner, he was out for the game. And so Jalen Armour Davis, a one-year starter at Alabama, rookie fourth-rounder, he's playing a ton of meaningful snaps. And so is Damarian Williams, who's a rookie fourth-rounder. Kyle Hamilton's back there, who's a first-round pick, but a rookie. So you don't have the players you intend to have. Yeah, you have Marcus Williams, but he's playing with three rookies with him on the back end. Not to mention their entire edge rusher situation was injured. They only had two available for the game. And probably more important than anything is you're talking about a Ravens defense that is not equipped to play zone coverage. That's all, everybody that they have, it's all about man coverage. It's Marcus Williams as your one high free safety and then playing man coverage underneath it. You can't do that against Miami. You have to play zone. So you're banged up, you're inexperienced, and you have a bunch of players that are best suited to play man coverage but have to play zone. Of course, there's going to be letdowns and coverage breakdowns and those types of things. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from Miami. Give them all the credit. They made the plays. They made the plays. Tua made the throws. But there's certainly something to be said for the context of Baltimore's defense in that game that made some of those opportunities possible. The next one comes from Jonel, who says, outside of economic/salary cap implications, would you trade straight up Diggs and Davis for Hill and Waddle effective immediately? Absolutely not. I would not do that. And here's why. People matter. People matter. Josh Allen loves Stephon Diggs. Josh Allen loves Gabriel Davis. So regardless, or I don't even find it necessary to talk about skill sets, talent level, whatever other variables, I'm not going to take away the two guys that he loves for two guys that he's never played with. In a vacuum, maybe I would answer the question differently, but we're talking about the Bills, and I'm not going to pull the rug out from Josh Allen when it comes to his top two receivers. I mean, could you imagine? Yeah, I like the skill sets that Waddle and Hill have, but Diggs and Davis, those are Josh Allen's dudes. And there's a human being element to this conversation that we have to keep in mind. The next one comes from Doug, and there's going to be some fun stuff here on Doug's question here. Not really the first part of his question, but towards the end. Doug says, first of all, prayers for Dane Jackson. All the reports are that things are as good as they can be after a scary, scary hit. Regardless of whether Dane can suit up, do you think this is the game Kyer Elam was drafted for? With his ability to jam at the line and sub 4.4 speed, it seems like a perfect time to play more press coverage to prevent free releases from Waddle and Hill. To that end, I know Benford is a big DB, but what are his press coverage and recovery speed skills like to match up with Miami's speedy receivers? Finally, does your daughter have a Bills jersey yet? And who is she rocking? My girls have matching Josh Allen jerseys, and they get so excited on game days. Thanks for all you do. So we will talk about my daughter in jerseys in just a moment, but let's do talk about the football side of this question with Dane Jackson potentially not being available. If this is a great game for Kyer Elam, and of course, Christian Benford's ability to play press coverage. Let's focus in on Elam first. Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill are 4-2 athletes. Tyreek Hill runs 4.29 in the 40-yard dash. A straight line, he runs a 4.29. Kyer Elam runs a 4.39. So Tyreek Hill is faster. But what you're also not accounting for in stacking up their 40-yard dash times is that Tyreek Hill is running in a straight line and Kyer Elam has to flip his hips in transition. And I think that's where any player loses speed, but also Kyer Elam is not that dynamic when it comes to change of direction ability. He's a straight line athlete. And so while Kyer Elam is straight line fast, Tyreek Hill is straight line faster, and Kyer Elam also has to flip his hips, turn, and run. So you like the speed that Kyer has, but we're talking about world-class speed in Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. To your question about getting jams at the line of scrimmage, you're living dangerously with that. Because if you're trying to create jams and get hands-on and reroute players at the line of scrimmage, if you don't get that done, you are toast. You are toast. If you're trying to get hard jams with your hands against Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and you don't get that done, they are going to fly right by you. So I'd be more interested in some soft press, maybe crowding them a little bit during their release. But you have to be in a good position to be able to turn and run. And so I think you have to play zone. I think you have to bracket as much as possible, high-low those players, maybe man it up elsewhere. And obviously, right now, I mean, the Bills' two safeties, Hyde and Poyer, they didn't practice on Thursday. Now, I don't question their ability to play in a game and not practice, but if they can't play because they're injured, that's a whole other story. And I would feel a whole lot better if I knew Poyer and Hyde were ready to go on Sunday, because they're the guys that can bracket. They're the guys that can disguise and rotate and change the menu on Tua. They're critical to this game. If you asked me to pick three players that I was guaranteed to have on Sunday for the Bills, I would pick Josh Allen, Jordan Poyer, and Micah Hyde. And then I would fill it in from there. But those are the three most important players on Sunday, in my opinion. As for my daughter, and there's a lot of new listeners to the podcast, so let me tell you that I do have a daughter. She's 2.5. Her name's Rebecca Jean. Love her to death. I love being a dad. It's my favorite thing I get to be as a dad. And my wife and I, we love being parents. And my wife is a Carolina Panthers fan. We've been working on that transition. She loves the Bills, but she loves the Panthers a little bit more. But I know that she will always root for the Bills unless the Bills and Panthers are playing in the same game. And she does love the Bills. She does. But we have a daughter, Rebecca Jean, and she does not have a jersey. She does have some Bills t-shirts. And I'll be honest with you, I don't even have a Josh Allen jersey. And I know that those things are pretty expensive. So I don't know if I want to, I mean, how quickly is she going to grow out of it at 2.5 years old? Probably pretty quick. But she does know all about Josh Allen, and I'm going to play a video for you. So if you're on the YouTube channel, you're going to see something that I think is very, very cute that gives you a little bit of a glimpse into her knowledge of Josh Allen. And just know that, like, there are times where she'll walk into my office and say, I want to watch Josh Allen. And she knows when he's on the TV. She's well aware of who number 17 is for the Buffalo Bills. So I spliced together a couple of clips that I recorded from my cell phone. And if you're listening on a regular podcast feed, you'll hear it. And if you're on YouTube, you will see it. So here you go.
That's Josh Allen.
Yeah, watch him.
Allen to the air and underneath Stephon Diggs with a gain of 6 yards.
That's a good play, huh? Who's that?
Josh Allen.
Here he goes.
So good on the move. He'll take off. He'll get a first down.
That's Josh Allen.
Yeah.
7 and 2nd and 3. And he gets by Wagner for the first down.
What do you want to do?
We have to be like Josh Allen.
You want to be like Josh Allen?
Yeah.
Cool.
little wholesome content for you here on a Friday. But man, I melt whenever she wants to talk about Josh Allen. I promise you, I don't provoke it. I've talked about it a few times, and she's got the little people. Josh Allen plays with them all the time, and she knows all about them. And man, it's just makes you so happy as a dad. Hopefully a lot of you guys can feel that same emotion, because it's super cool. All right, folks, here's the deal. You don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that guy that loses jewelry, right? We've all seen these videos of people on the internet. Somebody's proposing and they got the ring and they're on a deck and the ring falls out and it goes through the deck and into the water. And that sucks, right? You don't want to be that guy. Well, folks, the guys at Brightco Jewelry Insurance will make sure you get a replacement for the full value of that ring, no matter if it's lost, stolen, or you just can't figure out what happened to it. Go to bright.co/lockedon. It's the fastest, easiest, and cheapest way to cover your butt with the best jewelry insurance in the business. These guys at Brightco are geniuses. They made buying insurance for your engagement ring, your watch, or whatever so easy that you can get covered in minutes on your cell phone. You won't find a better deal on great coverage at super affordable. Bright.co/lockedon. We all hate insurance, but these guys at Brightco have turned the entire experience around. It is the fastest and easiest thing you can do for yourself this week. There's no excuses. For $5 a month, you can get totally comprehensive coverage, and it won't take you more than 2 minutes on your cell phone. Check it out. Bright.co/lockedon. The next one comes from Nick, and admittedly, this isn't exactly what Nick asked me, but I want to kind of take this angle on it, if you will. And what Nick shared was a graphic from Bills Mafia Babes, and the graphic is about a quote from Brittany Williams, who is Josh Allen's girlfriend, and Josh Allen's girlfriend Brittany was on Matthew Stafford's wife's podcast. So Kelly Stafford, she has a podcast, I think it's called The Morning After. And I listened to the Brittany Williams episode, but I don't typically listen to that podcast. And as Brittany was talking about Josh Allen and some of his habits as a human, she talked about how he sets 20 alarms every day and sleeps right through them. And she wakes up on the first one and has to smack him to wake him up. Right. So Josh Allen is that person that sets 20 alarms when he has to wake up and sleeps through them. And so the question that I'm going to make Nick ask me is, are you team Josh or team Britt? And folks, I love Josh Allen with everything that's within me, but I am team Britt all the way on this. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy that has to set 20 alarms, not wake up, and now your significant other has to be woken up and has to stay woken up for an extended period of time because you won't get your butt out of bed. Not a fan of that, Josh. Get going, man. Get up and get going. Don't put your girl through that. Wake up and wake up when you're supposed to. I one of the core principles, and I don't mean to get on these rants, but from time to time I will, because I worked really hard to come up with good process for my day. Part of the principles, or one of the key principles of my day, is that within 12 minutes from my alarm going off, that I'm at my desk working on the most important thing that I have to get done that day. So the alarm goes off at 5, and by 5:12, I'm downstairs working. And it sets me up for success that day to accomplish what I need to get accomplished, and most importantly, so that I can focus on my family that afternoon and not be bogged down by work. And so I know that me and Josh Allen have different lifestyles, but you can do it. This can be important to you, and you don't have to make your significant other go through that. A long time ago, before I started doing this football stuff full time, I had a regular job. And I remember days very rarely that my wife would have to wake up before me. And I would wake up when her alarm went off. And she was one of those people, she sets multiple alarms. Now, fortunately, I wake up way before her, so there's never a problem. But in those days where I didn't have to wake up and she's letting multiple alarms go off and hitting the sleep button over and over again, it's like, well, come on, can you have some consideration for me? I don't have to wake up right now, but I have to sit here and try to sleep through this and be angry and annoyed that I can't sleep. So don't do that. Not a fan of that at all. The next one comes from Justin, who says, what are your thoughts on the new offense we have been seeing this year. It fascinates me seeing the different groupings on the field. Is Reggie Gilliam going to be our Kyle Juszczyk? I'll tell you what, I remember being at camp this year, and I reported some of this back on the podcast where I'm like, I can't believe these personnel groupings. I can't believe it. And then they continue to show up in preseason and now into the regular season. And it's like, wow, this is going to be a very diverse offense in terms of personnel packages and personnel groupings. And I think it's great because it's going to really make it difficult for opposing defenses to pick up on tendencies because the Bills are so versatile. And so I think the first acknowledgement that I want to make is that this is not Brian Daboll's offense. I mean, I was two quarters into the game at SoFi Stadium, sitting with Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Dolphins. We're there at the game together. I turned to him and midway through the second quarter, I said, dude, this is not Brian Daboll's offense. And so we expected Ken Dorsey to put his stamp on this scheme, and my goodness, is he ever. Because there's a lot different in terms of how the Bills are lining up and what players at what positions are stepping onto the field. But I like it because I it's successful, obviously. I mean, the Bills have scored over 70 points across two games. You take that all day long. It's very efficient. They're scoring. And I like that as you project it forward, it's going to be really difficult for teams to say, okay, when the Bills are in this look, they're doing this. Because the Bills are so multiple with their looks and their groupings. So that's what I really like about it to this point. It's been effective, and I think it's going to be hard to pick up on tendencies. Next one comes from Johnny, who says, I was pleased that the Bills are attempting to balance our offense by finally adding a running option in the game plan. It seems as though it was abandoned early on in the game due to lack of success and then back to the air attack. Although the outcome was a win, why do you think we are so quick to ditch the run? And if we want to run, if we want the run game to work, why are we sitting our best back Singletary before he has a chance to establish rhythm? RB1 and RB2 combined for 9 carries for 36 yards. Hardly enough to get it going. What do you think? So I want to save my thoughts about Devin Singletary being taken out of the game to establish rhythm for the next item, which is going to come from Dan. All right, so stay tuned on that piece of it. But I want to comment now on the Bills getting out of that balanced approach that they showed early on in the game. We talked about this. It was very important to get Tennessee out of their game plan. You wanted them to become one-dimensional. You didn't want them to sit there and pound Derrick Henry, and that set up their play-action game and their RPO game. And the Titans had success on their first drive. They did. They ran Henry pretty effectively at times on that first drive. They started the game with that RPO and caught the Bills overcommitted to the run, and they hit a couple of play-action passes on that first drive, and they scored a touchdown. The Bills couldn't sit there and go back and forth with Tennessee. They needed to be aggressive and score points. And the best way they do that is to throw the football. And so you can't just sit there and try to work on something for the sake of working on it and trying to get the run game established if it's not working and keeping your opponent in the game when there's a clear way for you to score points and force them to become a one-dimensional offense. So it just wasn't the time. It wasn't the time to sit there and try to iron out your deficiencies in the run game. You got to figure that out some other way because you couldn't let Tennessee stick around. You couldn't. Now, the other part of the question will be answered in what's actually a statement by Dan, and I agree with everything that he's about to say. So just know what I'm about to read, I endorse. From Dan, as someone with Devin Singletary on 3 fantasy teams, I'm not thrilled with the output over the first couple of games. I assumed after a strong finish last season that he would be the undisputed number one running back. But the Bills appear to be trying out the same three-headed monster approach that they started last season with. After carefully following this regime since its inception, I have to believe there is sound reason for this because there is no way that they didn't see what we all saw with the running game at the end of last year. I have 2 theories that are not mutually exclusive of each other. 1, the team wants to see what each back can do in this Dorsey scheme behind the revamped Aaron Cromer-coached O-line. 2, and this is a doozy, fresh legs for Devin. I propose to you this. The Bills will do almost exactly what they did last season and use 3 running backs until the last handful of regular season games. This will allow Devin Singletary to not wear down in the beginning of the year and gives him a few games to assure his role as RB1 before playoff time. Unorthodox, but not crazy, right? Have I uncovered another instance of this Bills regime playing chess while the rest of the NFL plays checkers? Yes, it's everything you said, Dan. I think you have a perfect read on this situation, a perfect read on it. You want to see what you have in these backs, and you want to preserve Devin Singletary for when he's going to be the most important to you, which is at the end of the season and in the playoffs. You don't want to run him into the ground right now. And so, yes, that is absolutely what I believe this approach is rooted in, and I think it's the right approach. Absolutely. So good takes there. I support them fully. BetOnline is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports information this season. You can find all of the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including everything you need for week 3 of the NFL season. BetOnline is also your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. It's the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. It's BetOnline, and it's where the game starts. All right, the next one comes from Joe, and it's not me. It's a different Joe. Joe says, is there a possibility we lose Ken Dorsey after year one? Yeah. Yeah, there is. There certainly is. Now, there's a lot that needs to play out an entire season. You want to see how the offense evolves and how teams respond as more tape gets out there. But yeah, there's absolutely this possibility. He's on this type of a trajectory. And he's been around a lot of success, whether that's as a player with Miami, as a coach in Carolina, as a coach in Buffalo. You're seeing what Brian Daboll's getting done already with the Giants. Yeah, he's going to be really attractive, and it's absolutely a possibility. Now, I hope that he's awesome and he stays with the Bills for a while. But we have to acknowledge this possibility for sure. The good news is the Bills have Joe Brady as a quarterback's coach, and you'd like to think there could be an opportunity for him to be the successor to Ken Dorsey. But when you play football like this, when you come out there and, I mean, you're boat racing teams, other teams are going to want a part of what you're doing. So I think this is absolutely a possibility, and it goes back to something we've talked about in this podcast. It's not just about continuing to churn the roster and develop players. You got to do it from a front office perspective, and you got to do it from a coaching perspective. Brandon Bean has to continue to develop front office personnel, right? He's already lost Dan Morgan. He lost Brian Gain. Now we got him back, but that was another player guy that was plucked. He lost Joe Shane. You think other football teams out there aren't going to want Link Dawson or maybe giving Brian Gain another chance? There's a lot of talent. And Dennis Hickey was plucked, right? This is going to happen. You look at the Bills, right? Ken Dorsey is now the offensive coordinator. Brian Daboll was plucked. People are going to continue to want a piece of what's going on in Buffalo. And it's come back to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and their ability to groom and develop the next wave of coordinators and front office people and not just the roster. Justin says, when you have an absolute stud at quarterback, we all expected the offense to carry on where they left off last season. What has surprised you the most through two games with the defense? For me, it's the run D, 45 carries, 132 yards, 2.9 yards per carry. I want to push back a little bit on the first part of what you said there, Justin, about the expectation for the offense to pick up where they left off. Because last year, that wasn't the case. The offense wasn't good to start the year. And that was in year 4 of Brian Daboll with everything being the same around Josh Allen. And the offense was kind of fluttering to start the year. So with a new play caller and a new offense and several new players around Josh, several new coaches around Josh, I didn't come into this season with the expectation that the Bills were going to be this good on offense to start. Now, that's a pleasant surprise to me. I didn't think they'd be bad, but this good? I wasn't expecting that. The other side of that is defensively, what's expected me, what has surprised me the most. I think run defense is a good item to bring up. I was hopeful that with a lot of new players on that front, that it would be better. To me, what surprises me most on defense is how Kyer Elam and Christian Benford have been able to play significant snaps to start this season, and never once have I been like, oh my God, that's a liability to this defense. The Bills can't win with that guy out there. They're going to be exploited. That hasn't happened. And so for those guys coming in and holding their own, at this point, under these circumstances, that's what surprised me the most. Never once, not for one play, have I been like, oh my God, that rookie's killing the Bills. That's what surprised me. Alex says, with the emergence of Miami as a possible contender in the AFC, I'm curious how the team might fare at the end of the season in colder weather. I know it's early, but it's always possible the Bills could see this team in the playoffs. From Tua's college days at Bama to Miami's year-round climate, the Dolphins seem like a team that have a chance to fade when the weather turns. Are there statistics from Tua's career so far that support this, or is that an unjustified assumption at this point? Thanks and go Bills. No, Alex, you're absolutely right. I don't have the data for you right now, but I know that the game last year in Tennessee that they had to have to keep their playoff hopes alive, it's kind of wet, cold conditions, and he struggled. We've seen Tua play in Buffalo. He struggled. This is not a team that is going to translate well to colder weather, and not just because they play in South Florida, but the style of offense that we are anticipating with a lot of vertical passing, that's going to be tougher to do in cold weather. And that's why part of what we talked about this week was the expectations for this run game and how that's got to come together and be a bigger part of what this team does offensively. And so they've had some flashes, but I don't think their run game production is where they want it to be. So I think the big thing for Miami, defensively, I think they're in good shape. The style of defense they play will translate well to weather outside of their players not being accustomed to playing in colder climates. But they got to get their run game going because I think that's going to be a big staple. I don't think Tua is going to show up and go to places like Buffalo or go to Kansas City or go to Baltimore in January, that type of stuff. That's going to be difficult for him. And so that's something way down the line. But that if I was a Dolphins fan, I'd be thinking about that. And obviously, you're at an advantage when teams come to your place in September, but playoff games are played in January, and you don't want to have to go on the road. And that's a possibility for them. Brandon, last one today. He says, I'm curious as to your assessment on Edmonds the first two games of the season as compared to last season. I thought he's looked solid so far this season and has definitely made more splash plays. Go Bills. Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing about Tremaine Edmonds. I don't have to go back and rehash everything that I think about Tremaine Edmonds. I did a podcast in July that was 35 minutes on me talking about Tremaine Edmonds and what I think of him as a player and the value that he brings to the team. And to give you a little bit of a glimpse into that, I like Tremaine Edmonds a lot, and I love the skill set that he brings. I like his leadership, and I like what he means to a Bills defense that has been outstanding with him as their middle linebacker. But I think the overall ability to feel his presence more to people watching games and to see some splash plays and to notice him more is just another example of this defense that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier and Brandon Bean have built and how much they talk about how it starts up front. It starts up front. The Bills win up front. Everyone else is going to play a lot better. And so I think because their defensive line play has been so much better this year, it has truly allowed Tremaine Edmonds to get to the football faster, process quicker, and be more consistent. Now, obviously, he's still making plays in coverage and influencing coverage lanes, and you saw him get his hand on that football that led to the Jordan Poyer interception. All of that stuff's still there, but his downhill ability has been better because the Bills' defensive line has been better. It starts up front, and that's a good example of what Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier and Brandon Bean are talking about when they say it starts up front, because now Tremaine Edmonds is playing better, and collectively I think people are a lot more satisfied with what they've seen through two games from Tremaine Edmonds compared to what's been on tape in the past. All right, folks, that's it for today, but not this week. As a reminder, I'm back tomorrow. We're going to do leftover thoughts, banged up Bills, prospects to watch, my game predictions. So a lot to get into tomorrow on the podcast. Come on back. Make sure you don't miss it. Make sure you're subscribed. We'd love it if you took a second to rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great rest of your day, and I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.